Ladies and gentlemen, please rise. This court is now in session.
Please be seated. Would the clerk call the next case, please?
322-0404,
Oven for oral argument,
cases argued
as a cross appeal.
Timothy N. Schiller
and Amy Schiller, appellants by Aaron Stanton versus Home Services of Illinois, LLC, DBA, Koning and Stray, Real Living. Appellee by Richard Perna.
Thank you. Mr. Stanton,
good afternoon. Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Aaron Stanton. Please the court, Mr. Perna, counsel. I represent Timothy and Amy Schiller, the appellants, cross appellees in this case. The Schillers, I'll call them the Schillers for purposes of this argument, filed suit against Home Services of Illinois, which I'll call Home Services. You will see them referred to in the briefs as Koning Stray or Berkshire Hathaway sometimes, seeking commissions on 30 fully executed purchase contracts that they obtained while they were working for Home Services. The Schiller's position is that they were entitled to 90% of those commissions because they earned those commissions during the term of their agreement by obtaining fully executed purchase contracts. Home Services' position is that because those contracts didn't close while the Schillers were working, they closed afterwards, that the Schillers no longer had a right to the commissions that they earned while they worked there. There's no factual dispute at all that the Schillers did all the work while they were working for Home Services to obtain and did obtain those 30 fully executed purchase contracts during the term of their agreement. So we went to trial and the jury returned a verdict in favor of the Schillers on a breach of contract. The trial court entered judgment against the Schillers on the Wage Act. And
counsel, I'm curious, why did this go to trial and before a jury at all if everyone was in agreement with regards to the facts?
Well, it's a good question. We did have Home Services filed a 619A9, I believe, motion to dismiss, and the trial court held there was a question of fact as to when the commissions were earned, and there was cross motions for summary judgment. I think it was the second motion for summary judgment by Home Services. We filed a motion for summary judgment on a breach of contract, and the trial court held that there was a question of fact, so somewhat of a truncated opinion.
However, it's an interpretation of contract. An interpretation of contract is reviewed de novo. It's not a question of fact.
I don't disagree with that. I think what the court held was, in its opinion, its written opinion, was that there was a question as to whether or not the commissions were earned, and that was a factual issue that should go to trial.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Mara?
It does, yep. But I am confused by the trial court's holding, but go on.
Yes. The trial court held there was a question of fact, but then with respect to the Wage Act, agreed with the Home Services position that the commissions weren't, after the Schillers left, the commissions, even though they earned them, even though they had done all the work, that somehow they lost the right to those commissions after they resigned because those commissions or those transactions didn't close until after the Schillers left. So that is wrong in several respects. One, with respect to the contract. Two, with respect to the Wage Act. And the big issue here is whether the commissions were earned. And I know Home Services in their briefs take issue with that and say it's a distraction, say it's not relevant, but this is a claim under the Wage Act, and the Schillers are seeking relief under Section 9 and Section 5 of the Wage Act, which requires the Home Services to pay them their full final commission and not reduce it. The Wage Act expressly defines final compensation as earned commissions. So earned commissions are certainly relevant to this matter. And if the commissions were earned, then certain presumptions come into play, including the regulation of the Wage Act, which is 56 Illinois Admin Code, Section 300.510A. And that's a regulation, of course, carries the force of law. And that regulation addresses this issue. And it says salespersons who obtain a right to a commission under their contract, the fact that they leave and the contract doesn't close, the transaction doesn't close, doesn't mean they're stripped of their right to their earned commission. And that was something that the judge didn't consider. The judge also didn't consider, he actually construed the agreement against the Schillers, any sort of ambiguity. So the judge's ruling, if you look at his ruling, it is only a few sentences. He based his ruling that the Schillers lost their right to their earned commissions on one sentence in the second paragraph of the second addendum. So there's the agreement here incorporates a sales associate agreement. It incorporates what's called the first addendum to that agreement that was signed at that time. And then there's a second addendum. And the trial court focused solely on this one sentence in the second paragraph of the second addendum that says, during the term, the Schillers commission shall be 90%. And that doesn't address when the commission is earned. The commission is earned under paragraph 6 of the sales associate agreement. And that agreement, if I can just quote that, Your Honors, has two pieces. There's two separate events here. It's, quote, when sales associates shall perform any service whereby a commission is earned. That's one piece. The second piece is, quote, when a commission has been collected, it shall be distributed as soon as practical. So there's two wins. So there's two events. So when a commission is earned is separate from when a commission is paid and collectible. And the judge didn't consider that when he construed just one sentence of the second addendum. And the undisputed evidence here, and you know, when a commission is earned, is that was subject to debate. And there was testimony from the Schillers that they earned their commission when they obtained fully executed purchase contracts under that Section 6A, under that Section 6.
Isn't that the case under the case law as well?
Yes, so that would be Zink versus Maple. Zink versus Maple holds that if it's unclear that the commission is earned when they fully executed purchase contracts obtained. So, in our view, under the Wage Act, under the contract, and under the undisputed fact that the Schillers did all the work to obtain these fully executed contracts while they were there, and even did the work afterwards, any sort of ancillary work, that they earned these commissions. And because they earned these commissions, the court should have looked at the regulation of the Wage Act, which says underlying transaction doesn't close while the salesperson is there, it doesn't mean that they're stripped of their right to that commission. And I think that's an important concept if you look at salespeople who only work on commission. Oftentimes, unless they get a draw, you know, they get paid when the company gets paid. So I think that's the purpose of that regulation. It protects it. But the trial court judge ignored that and read in language in the second addendum that the Schillers the transaction had to close while they were there. That's not there. It turns the regulation on its head. It also construes, if you consider that ambiguous, because it does say during the term the Schillers commission shall be 90%. It doesn't say closed, it doesn't say earned, but the judge did construe it against the Schillers. And it's undisputed, the facts are undisputed, that Molly Ryan, who was the general counsel for the Home Services, did draft that contract, the second addendum. And she had been an attorney for 40 years. She couldn't remember how many contracts she had drafted. She admitted when she testified that specific language is very important. She could have made it clear in that language. She could have put closed. She didn't. So it's ambiguous. So under the law, the common law, that should be construed against the Schillers, even more so under the cases we cited with respect, because these are earned commissions, in order to strip someone of earned commissions, it has to be very clear, and it's not clear here. And
what about the provision in the contract that says, notwithstanding any other provision, that if it's not expressly provided in the second addendum, that the policy and procedure manual applies?
Sure, Judge. So I think the issue there is, again, the Schillers do not take the position that the policy manual doesn't apply to them. They've never taken that position. But the second addendum, paragraph 9, says terms not addressed in the second addendum are subject to the Home Services Policy Manual. So it's always been the Schillers' position that their commissions are addressed in the second addendum. They have the right to 90% commission split on the 30 fully executed purchase contracts that they obtained during the term of their agreement. And I think that question, if I can just kind of talk, give a little context to how the Schillers came to Home Services, and this I think will shed some light on that question, Your Honor, is the Schillers came to Home Services in April of 2010, and they came as part of the purchase of Schiller Real Estate, which is a company their parents owned. And the Schillers, everyone else who came over from Schiller Real Estate, like all the other real estate brokers at Home Services, signed what's called the Sales Associate Agreement. And that Sales Associate Agreement does have the earned language we just talked about, but it doesn't have a set commission schedule. When the Schillers negotiated their coming over to Home Services, they negotiated a first addendum. And that first addendum had what's called a paragraph that's called the 80-20 commission schedule. And that 80-20 commission schedule provided that the Schillers would get 80% of all the commissions of fully executed contracts they brought in. That was then amended as part of the second addendum. But everyone else who didn't have this addendum, the agents who just signed the sales associate agreement, they had what's called a commission schedule, which was a document that Home Services put out that was essentially a chart of commissions and sales volume. And you might hit this sales volume one year and have an 80% split, and the next year you didn't have such a good year and it came down to 60. The Schillers, that didn't apply to the Schillers. That was the undisputed testimony. Their general contractor called them unique in that way because they had their commission schedule, commission split, locked in. It was locked in their first addendum and then their second addendum. So the answer to your question, Your Honor, is the second addendum says terms not addressed in the second addendum are subject to the Home Service Policy Manual. It was addressed. Their commission split was addressed. Everyone else wasn't. So that policy manual provision would not apply to the Schillers. It also wouldn't apply to the Schillers because Home Services never gave them notice of this provision. The Schillers started in April of 2010. The undisputed testimony is sometime in 2013, Home Services put this, we'll call the 50% terminated agent fee, in their policy manual. The undisputed testimony is no one ever told the Schillers or anyone else at Home Services there's been a change in the policy manual. Molly Ryan, who's the general counsel, drafted that. She also met with the Schillers before they signed the second addendum, never mentioned that. The position of Home Services is that the Schillers should have reviewed the policy manual periodically to see if there were any changes. That just doesn't comport with the law, which, Your Honor, which you cited Hannah versus Marshall Field, where there has to be some sort of notice given in a manner to make the worker aware that there's a change in the policy manual. You just can't change a 59-page policy manual, put something in there, and not tell anybody. So in addition to that reason, the other reason is that they never had notice of it. And there's a third reason that the policy manual doesn't apply to, and this kind of brings me back to my English class in high school. The word terminated agent, we outline this in the briefs, is a passive participle. And we cite a case with this. And a passive participle under standard grammar construction means that the noun, the subject, which is agent, is receiving the action from the verb. So it means the Schillers were terminated. So if you apply standard grammar, if you apply the rule that any sort of ambiguity should be construed against Home Services because they drafted this, and that the Schiller's commission split should be protected, then it doesn't apply here. And again, Molly Ryan, the general counsel of Home Services, testified she drafted this language. She could have made it clear. And if you read the whole policy, there's actually two pieces of the policy. And the first piece of the policy says, separated agents, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, have to pay $500 to get listing agreements released. And the second half of the same policy says terminated agents. So there's a distinction there. And to the extent there's any ambiguity, I think if you apply the rule that ambiguity should be construed against the drafter, which it's undisputed here was Home Services, and it should be to standard grammatical rules, the Schillers were not terminated agents because it was undisputed that they resigned. Certainly, the Schillers could have terminated the contract, which they did, but by the pure definition of grammatical definition and construing the ambiguity against Home Services, they weren't a terminated agent under that policy. So those are the reasons that the policy manual provision would not apply to the Schillers. It's an earned commission. It's set forth in the second addendum. They were unique, in the words of Home Services General Counsel. Other agents, it would apply to, but the Schillers had this floor, you call it a floor, where they had an 80-20% commission schedule in their first addendum, and then a 90%. So it didn't apply, because it clearly says, terms not addressed, and it was addressed in here. And again, if you construe any ambiguity against Home Services, if you take the fact that earned commissions, in order to rescind those or reduce those, the contract language has to be clear. And here, it's not clear at all in any manner, shape, or form. So those are the first two points. Do you have a question, Your Honor?
I just noticed your time was
up. Oh, sorry. Thank you very much. Unless you have any questions.
No, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal on this issue.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm sorry, Mr. Perna?
Yes, it is.
Good afternoon.
Please, please the court, Richard Perna on behalf of the defendant, Home Services of Illinois. And Your Honor, I'm going to go through this pretty quickly because I'm going to go through it again when I bring in my brief in chief. But there's a lot of confusion on these sales associate agreements that I think needs to be cleared up. First of all, if you read the original sales associate agreement, the only thing that it really says in there that's very important is actually two things. One is that the sales, the rights of a sales associate to any commission relating to any transaction that was closed before such termination, and the termination means the termination of the sales associate agreement, shall not be divested by the termination. That's key, okay? Secondly, that the sales associate agreement incorporates, by reference in paragraph 20, the policy manual again, okay? The first addendum, that we don't even have to look at that. That was superseded by the second addendum. Let's take a look at the second addendum. What was left out of my colleague's conversation was the term is defined in the second addendum. This second addendum will remain in effect until the parties agree in writing to either revise it or until either party terminates the IC agreement. Counsel just admitted his client terminated the IC agreement. Next, the term, the payment during the term, that is until either party terminates the IC agreement, which they did, Schiller's commission split shall be 90%. Do you hear anything about what happens after the term? No. Therefore, the policy manual kicks in as to what occurs after the agreement is terminated. The Schillers actually acknowledged in this writing, when they signed it, each of them, that they acknowledged the policies and procedures were binding upon them. If they didn't look at it...
Counsel, what about the argument that they had to be given notice of a change in the policy and procedure manual, and they were not?
Your Honor, they had full access to the policy procedures manual constantly on the intranet. They testified to that. They didn't bother to look at it. They knew they were signing a document that made...
Counsel, the case law says that you have to, you're entitled to notification that there's been a change in the policy and procedure manual.
Your Honor, they were told, and it's reflected in this document, that, and it was a new policy and procedure manual, that they agreed that they were going to be bound by it, which means they had the right to look at it. They had access to it. It wasn't as if we hid it from them.
Where's that in the record?
I'd have to look it up, Your Honor.
Okay.
I will tell you that they did testify that both of them knew it was there. They used other documents that were in the intranet as well as the policy manual. The policy manual covers many different aspects, including expense reimbursement and the like. If this were not the case, may I suggest, then they would get no commission. The agreement only required us to pay a 90% commission during the term. And the factor of earned is a red herring. We did never said they didn't earn something. It's what they earned. It was 90% during the term, and because of the policy manual provision, it was 50% after the term. And that's what Judge Schwartz looked at and determined that that followed in the fact that this was truly incorporated into the contract. The policy manual has been incorporated into the contract, and there's been no dispute of that. It was incorporated way back in the sales associate agreement.
But it didn't provide at the time that it was incorporated in the sales associate agreement the 50% on termination.
Your Honor, that would be irrelevant because at the time they signed the addendum where they specifically acknowledged that they were being, that those policies were going to be binding upon them, that was in there at that point in time. It didn't change after the fact, if that's your question. It existed at the time that they executed this.
Okay.
And that's in the, sorry?
Do the policy manual changes require consideration?
This would be consideration, Your Honor. I mean, we increase their commission from 80 to 90%. I don't believe it does. I think each group, and actually that was ruled upon by the underlying court, every one of these provisions in the sales associate agreement as well as the addendum states that incorporated by reference to this agreement is the Kanigan Stray GMAC policy manual, because that was the name of the company at the time, the core policies and procedures in the agent select plan as may be modified from time to time. Now, understand it resides on something called the intranet. The intranet is necessary for them to do their daily work. That's also in the record and is testified to. And the other issue is there are many things in the policy manual. Expense reimbursement. It's not hidden. It's bolded. It says terminated brokers provision. Lastly, because I only have a few minutes here, I want to get to final compensation. There's no dispute at all that if a deal doesn't close, nobody gets paid. They don't get a commission, a 90% or 25% or anything else, or 50% commission, if a deal doesn't close. Okay? This happens all the time with brokers. They do a lot of work. They don't close a deal. They don't get paid the commission. They go to some other broker, et cetera, and so forth and so on. In regards to final compensation, when they left my client's agreement, when they terminated their independent contractor agreement with my client, there was no way to calculate exactly what amounts were due them. In fact, one of the contracts didn't even bother to have a true sale price in it. So nobody knew what they were going to get paid at the time, if they were going to get paid. So it was totally impossible for anybody to pay anybody any amount of money in regards to final compensation. It was all speculative. It may close, it may not close. One of the transactions closed approximately a year or more after it was actually signed. That's not the intent of the Wage Act. That is stretching what the definition of final compensation is. If it's not final compensation, the Wage Act doesn't apply. In fact, if you look in the record, originally, plaintiffs were claiming 36 pending transactions for $171,000 in a commission difference. And when we finally got to trial, there were only 30 of those 36 that actually closed, and it was only $155,000 and some change in transactions that happened. Throughout the arguments that have been made, counsel uses the term earned. Earned's not used in the agreements. We're talking about what is the commission split. The listing agreement is executed between the brokerage and the seller. Our contract is what split are the shillers going to get and when. If it was before they left and terminated their agreement, it was 90%. If it was after they left and terminated their agreement, it was 50%. They also keep on claiming that they were unique. Unique shows up nowhere in any of the agreements. Counsel for Home Services said that they were unique. That's why they had the first addendum. That's why they had the second addendum. But that doesn't change the terms of a contract just because you're unique. Lastly, they keep on using the term minimum, that the 90% was a minimum. You can scour every document, and I'll go through them in more detail in my case in chief. You will not find the word minimum in any of the documents at all. That's all I have at this point.
Okay. I think that I'm confused, but I think you do your argument now.
Okay, that's fine. Let me grab
the
papers.
Right?
Is that how we're doing it?
The other side will do their 5 minutes.
He gets his 5 minutes now?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry,
right.
Mr. Perna, that was my mistake.
No.
So, Mr. Stanton,
sure,
you get your
five minutes
of rebuttal.
But then you don't get another 5 minutes?
No, I get 5 minutes.
Right. I think, did you have that down for 15 minutes instead of five?
I thought it was 15, 15, and five, and five.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Oh.
Yes.
It was confusing.
That's why I thought that was going a little bit.
Yeah, I. That's fine. I was rebutting his.
Yes.
Argument.
No, you've got 15, 15, and 15 for you, 15 for him, and yeah.
Yeah, we're short, though.
15, 15, five, and five.
He gets 15 for his
main
argument.
Yeah, I think it's Mr. Price's turn to make his argument, and then
then he should get
Mr.
15
Stanton
minutes.
Right, for this argument.
Yes.
Okay.
So you didn't get your full 15.
He didn't take his full
15. I thought I was only getting
He was doing rebuttal. Of the
I was doing rebuttal of counsel's argument.
Okay.
That's the way I understand it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you all understand it, and I don't, apparently, because I thought that you were entitled to more time.
Sure. Ready to take the five.
So, fine. Go ahead. And
sure. So,
counsel, you want to rebut this cross-appeal argument, so shouldn't Mr. Perna go first?
Yeah, I think that's the
point. Yes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
So this is 15.
15.
Right. And the last one should have been 5.
Okay.
That's why it seemed like it was going
to be.
Sorry,
that's why I was just rebutting his argument. I was rushing it a little bit.
Normally, okay, just let me
get
just
this.
Sure.
I have to defer to you on this.
Normally, you would get 15 minutes for your main argument. You, as appellee, would get 15 minutes to respond to his main argument. Then he gets 5 minutes of rebuttal. Then you get 15 minutes for your main argument. But that isn't what's on this paper. So I apparently...
No, it was 15-5, 15-5, as I understood it.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, you had your 5 on his case.
Correct.
Okay.
And I'll do my 15 on mine.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Your Honor, or Your Honors, we're gonna rehash a little bit of what's going on because the arguments are very similar. I want to start out by discussing the denial of the judgment, notwithstanding the verdict, the GNLV. And that's going to require an investigation of the contracts again. And I'll go through the contracts. There are several terms in the sales associate agreement which are important. As I previously stated, the commissions that would be earned in paragraph 6 of the sales associate agreement would be divided between Kanigan Stray GMAC and sales associate as stated in the company policy manual. That's in the actual sales associate agreement. The rights of the sales associate to any commission relating to any transaction that was closed before such termination shall not be divested by the termination. The closed, keyword, that's paragraph 18. Paragraph 20, incorporated by reference to the agreement is the Kanigan Strait GMAC policy manual, core policies and procedures. And again, sales associate acknowledges that this is the entire agreement between the parties. So it's incorporating the policy manual into the agreement. Again, as I stated, the second addendum was superseded, or the first addendum was superseded by the second addendum. The second addendum defines term. The second addendum will remain in effect until the parties agree in writing to revise the second addendum or until either party terminated the IC agreement. Again, that's what counsel's client did. They terminated the IC agreement. The commission split. During the term, Schiller's commission split shall be 90%. Okay? And of importance is that the second addendum amended and modified all previous agreements consistent with the terms therein. If it didn't change the term, it didn't modify it, but all terms set forth and they were modified. And lastly, again, the Schillers acknowledged the policies and procedures manual and that they were bound by it in the signing of this agreement in the addendum. The policies and procedures manual states, it is also the policy of Coding and Strait to pay commission to terminated agents at a rate of 50% on all pending transactions closing after the agent's termination date. Counsel wishes to change that terminology away from what's stated in the second addendum, which talks about termination of the IC agreement. That's the termination we're talking about, not firing. There's nothing in here that says you have to be fired to be terminated. It was the termination of the agreement.
Except, counsel, the language of the policy and procedure manual doesn't say agents who terminate. It says terminated agents. That means something was done to the agent. The agent was terminated, not that the agent terminated the agreement.
Well, if you look at terminated and you look at them together, Your Honor, termination actually is talking about a termination of the relationship. They're terminated. They're no longer, their licenses are no longer held by, in this case, in the original case, Kanigan Strait Home Services of Illinois. So they've terminated their relationship. That's the terminated, not that something was done to them. So in regards to the JNOV, the court examined these documents. The court made a decision on count two that we did not breach the contract, that the plain language of the contract was not ambiguous, that it was a matter of law, and taking the facts which were undisputed and applying to that contract, the court deemed that we didn't breach the contract. Unfortunately, when we filed our JNOV, he denied the JNOV, entered the judgment by the jury saying that we did breach the contract, but in the same breath, entered an order saying we didn't breach the contract. And that's one of the reasons that we're here today, because I think he got it correct. There was no ambiguity in the contract. He heard the facts of the parties. He looked at the contract. He applied the law to the contract. And he said, this is what this means. Now, understand that under the License Act, an agent can only be paid by a sponsoring broker. After they terminated, we were no longer their sponsoring broker. There's one exception to that, and that is that they could get paid after they terminate the license with us based upon the agreements with their previous broker. The addendum says you only get 90% during the term. The term says when either party terminates the IC agreement. So when they terminated the IC agreement, their right to 90% ended. And this, again, is understanding that nothing is received by anyone, nothing is transferred to anyone unless there's a closing. And that was the whole issue with the Wage Act. Nobody gets paid a dime. If that were the case, when they left the company, they would have demanded the full payment of the 90% commission. They didn't do that. In fact, they went over to App Properties, and App Properties paid them the difference between the 50% that we paid them, because they did receive it, and the 40% they would have received had they not terminated the contract. And they only paid them, and this is Thad Wong, who's the, I believe, CEO of App Properties, they only paid them when the closing occurred. And again, not all the closings and contracts, rather, that were in place at the day that they left eventually closed. So we didn't get a commission, they didn't get a commission. We're talking the difference between something that was earned and something that was agreed to be split. They're making a big deal of earned. Earned has nothing to do with it. The contract dealt with the day you signed the contract, you had a right to something. Contract said, if it closes before you terminate this contract with us, our independent contractor agreement or sales associate agreement, you get 90%. Silence. The second addendum says if it's not talked about here, you have to look at the policy manual. And the policy manual made the provision that allowed them to receive the 50%. Because it's our argument today that if that provision wasn't there, the contract ended. We didn't receive anything. They didn't, quote unquote, earn anything before the termination. If that were the case, the phrase in the second addendum that said your split is 90% until you terminate the sales associate agreement would have no effect.
That's not exactly what the phrase says, though, is it?
No, it says, Your Honor, it says the second addendum will remain in effect until the parties agree in writing to revise the second addendum or until either party terminated the IC agreement. During the term, show's commission split shall be 90%. The rights under the contract expired when they terminated their agreement. In order for me to pay them, they have to have a right to receive something, and that is in the policy manual. And that's why it's there. And again, we believe that the judge should have ruled on our JNOV, because by his very ruling on count two, he said the jury was wrong. And so, it never should have gone to the jury.
Counsel, let me ask you.
Sure.
How is this a jury question? How is this ever
It's a jury not question? A jury question. You'll see that at the end of my argument, I was going to say that further, given the court's ruling on count two, they should have awarded summary judgment. But they didn't. So they let it go to the jury, and whether more consideration in reading, or I don't know why, but his ruling is in direct opposition to the jury verdict. I don't know what to tell you, but that's the fact. And Your Honor raised it out of the gate that, wait a minute, this is a breach of contract. There's no ambiguity here. He can interpret the contract. He claimed there was no ambiguity. That's why he ruled what he did on count two. So I'm not here to speculate or guess, but it's our opinion that it never should have got to the jury, that it should have been handled on summary judgment because nobody disputed the facts. My next argument is based on an oral contract that was alleged to have existed between App Properties and the Schillers. The oral contract, they allege, was that they would bring a lawsuit. The lawsuit, if successful, they would pay the money back to App Properties that they advanced them, as I previously said, the 40% differential. However, through all the discovery, I think it's a 2014 case, 9 years, we've not seen an email, a conversation, setting forth a specific date that this agreement actually happened. Nothing. In fact, the testimony is If the Shillers tomorrow told Mr. Stanton, dismiss the case, they would have no obligation to pay at properties a dime. Another important fact is the Shillers, by their own admission, have paid no legal fees over 9 years to bring this matter.
I don't understand how that is relevant.
Because there's no mutuality of this agreement, Your Honor. If you have a contract, both parties have to have some skin in the game. They have no skin in the game. This wasn't brought by the Shillers because the Shillers were concerned about anything. This was brought on behalf of Ab Properties to recover money that they advanced the Shillers in order to get them in the boat sooner. That's what this is about, and it's testified. It's in the record. That Ab Properties, in order to entice the Shillers to leave with all these pending contracts, said, hey, come on over here, and we'll reimburse you for that money. That's all that's in any of the offer letters. That's all that you see in writing. After the fact, I believe, or maybe never, there was some sort of an agreement, which nobody can testify as to what the date that that agreement actually occurred. Now, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, but nobody really can tell you, did we decide on this on March 10th, on the 24th, in April, in May, last year? Nothing. There's no specificity or detail of that contract, and there's no mutuality. The Shillers had no skin in the game. They didn't have to perform under the contract. They had already been given an offer letter where they were told that they would be receiving reimbursement for these funds. But there's nothing in that offer letter that says anything about an obligation on behalf of the Shillers to pay the money back to them or to maintain the lawsuit or of anything else, any other nature. In fact, they testified they could have walked away at any point. And only morally were they believed to be obligated to do that. We also argue that motion limiting number 7 should have been ruled upon because earned is not an issue. It's a red herring. The issue of the contract is not earned. The issue is what the split's going to be.
Counsel, did that motion in limine, that objection come, did you renew that objection at trial?
We believe we did. You'd have to look at the brief, Your Honor. I'm pretty sure that we did. We objected to a lot of things during the course of the trial. Lastly, the editor. The confusion here is the jury came back with a verdict that said we breached a contract. Okay? And then the jury calculates the damage that they claim were owed based upon a provision in the second addendum that had nothing to do with nothing. Nobody testified anywhere during the trial that the Shillers disclosed the 90% commission that they were given in the second addendum, and that is the only time where the commission would be reduced to 75%, which is baffling to me, because they claim we breached a contract to pay them 90% in the answers to the jury instructions, but yet, they gave him 75%. So we're concerned that there was confusion in the jury room. They did not believe that we owed them 90%. Otherwise, they would have gave him 90%. It looks to me, unfortunate use of terms, as a split the baby, that they decided to give 75%. We did not consent to the editor for those very reasons, because we can't determine how did they come to this and why did they come to this. But yet, the editor was granted. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Mr. Stanton?
Should we quiet 5 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Everyone wants to get out of here.
Okay, I'll be quick, Your Honors. Couple things. One, I want to follow up. Mr. Perna mentioned that the second addendum, the reference to the policy manual said new policy manual. It doesn't say new policy manual. It says policy manual. So they weren't given notice there was a new policy manual.
That's undisputed. With respect to earned, of course earned is relevant here. That was the whole case comes down to earned. That's why the court denied the motion to dismiss, denied the cross motions for summary judgment. And once the commissions are earned, which it's undisputed they were under Zink and the undisputed testimony, then you have to strictly construe any ambiguity against the drafter. Again, that's Home Services. And any sort of reduction in the commissions has to be clear. And you also then have the Wage Act regulation that comes into place that clearly shows that there's a difference between earned and closing. Council wants to make earned and closed the same thing. They're not. Paragraph 6 of the Sales Associate Agreement has two wins. When a commission is earned, when it's payable. It's two separate things, two separate events. Molly Ryan, the General Counsel of Home Services, could have very easily made that clear in the second addendum. She didn't. So any ambiguity has to be construed against Home Services. With respect to the oral argument, there was lots of testimony. This was a huge part of the case. And both Tim Schiller and the CEO of their new brokerage testified that if Home Services reduced the Schiller's commissions, the new broker would advance them to offset the harm, and in consideration, the Schillers would immediately come over to the new brokerage. They would pursue the case, and they would repay the new brokerage with any money recovered in this case. That was the testimony. Tim Schiller did testify that he had a moral obligation, but those two things aren't mutually exclusive. In fact, Tim Schiller made this clear, and this is in the record, sub to R90 to R91. When asked, "Why are you here today? Why did you bring this lawsuit?" Mr. Schiller answered, "Well, one, we felt it was wrong that Berkshire Koning Stray did this to us. We also felt we had an obligation to their new broker to get back the money." So clearly, you can have a moral obligation and a legal obligation. And Tim Schiller testified over and over and over again that he had an obligation, a legal obligation under the oral contract. And when asked if the jury awards some damages, his answer was, "We pay back based on the oral agreement." And the jury clearly found, I think it was 2-6 of the jury verdict, that the Schillers met offer acceptance consideration for the oral agreement. So we had an oral agreement. With respect to editor, the court didn't grant editor. The court granted a JNOV motion. And I think we cited this in our briefs, the Chapman versus Deep Rock Oil case, 333 Illap 529. Very same case on point. The only evidence here was the $155,016.78. That's the difference between the 90% and the 50%. There was no other evidence of damages. So we don't know what the jury did, what it did. I mean, albeit it was a late Friday afternoon, maybe, who knows? But we can't speculate to that. But as the judge said, there was going to be a new trial on what? There was only one number of damages put into evidence. Counsel didn't even cross Tim Schiller on that number. It was undisputed. So that's the damages, and Judge Schwartz properly granted a motion for JNOV to have the verdict conform with the evidence at trial. That's all I have, unless you have any questions, Your Honors.
I have no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we thank both of you for your arguments this afternoon. We will take the matter under advisement and we'll issue a written decision as quickly as possible.